This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. President Donald Trump's announced agreement with Canada on updating the 24-year-old North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA. It's now called the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, or USMCA. A separate deal was reached in August with Mexico.
I have long contended that NAFTA was perhaps the worst trade deal ever made. Since NAFTA's adoption, the United States racked up trade deficits totaling more than $2 trillion.
The new pact followed months of difficult negotiations run up to a midnight deadline, allowing Congress a 60-day period of review.
So we have negotiated this new agreement based on the principle of fairness and reciprocity. To me, it's the most important word in trade because we've been treated so unfairly by so many nations all over the world that we're changing that.
The new agreement was also hailed by outgoing Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto.
En agosto pasado, México y Estados Unidos.
He said the pact brings the relationship among the three neighbors up to date, promoting responsible regional commerce and labor in the environment, creating more jobs, higher salaries, enhancing certainty of trade, promoting new technologies, and strengthening competitiveness. Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau acknowledged painful compromises had to be made, including greater U.S. access to its highly protected dairy market, but insisted it was the right deal for Canada and a win-win-win for all three countries. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari, delivering an Independence Day address on Monday, said next year's election will be both free and fair. The 75-year-old incumbent has announced his intention to run for re-election. His ruling All Progressives Congress is expected to endorse him during a meeting this coming weekend. Meanwhile, the opposition People's Democratic Party is expected to select its own challenger at the same time. This is VOA News. In Indonesia, two moderate earthquakes shook the southern coast of Sumba Island Tuesday. There were no immediate reports of casualties or damage. Meanwhile, the death toll from Friday's massive 7.5 magnitude earthquake and tsunami surpassed 840, with hundreds still missing and tens of thousands displaced. Rescue workers discovered the bodies of 34 students killed after a mudslide engulfed their church. Even as local and foreign rescue teams fan out to isolated communities on Sulawesi Island, the UN warned nearly 200,000 are in urgent need of humanitarian assistance. This man, identified only as Ferdi, said the quake shook him and destroyed his home. Survivors spoke of hundreds of homes just simply disappearing. More than a million people are believed to have lived in the affected area, including the city of Palu and the region of Donggala. Marking the one-year anniversary of Catalonia's failed bid to break from Spain, tens of thousands of protesters blocked roads and railway lines and clashed with police. This demonstration was held outside the regional parliament building in the city Barcelona. Madrid imposed direct rule on the region after it declared independence last October following a referendum. Later elections selected another regional government that supports still splitting with Spain. Polls show the region evenly split over independence. Despite a low voter turnout marking Sunday's name change referendum in Macedonia that's not legally binding, the government of Prime Minister Zoran Zaev vowed to push ahead so the former Yugoslav Republic can eventually join the NATO alliance and the European Union. But Macedonia's president, Georgia Ivanov, said the low voter turnout was a sign the people opposed changing the name to Republic of North Macedonia, as called for in agreement with Greece. The government needs a two-thirds vote in parliament to effect the change. The opposition has called for early elections. Iraq's parliament postponed a vote to Tuesday on a new president after the two dominant Kurdish parties for the first time contested the post that's reserved for a Kurd. The vote is a key step toward forming a new government, which politicians have been unable to do since elections held in May. Iran said it fired half a dozen missiles Monday at Islamic State militants in Syria, saying it was in retaliation for a cross-border attack last month that killed 25 people at a military parade. International Monetary Fund Director Christine Lagarde Monday said trade disputes and tariffs are becoming a drag on the global economy.
If the current trade disputes were to escalate further, they could deliver a shock to a broader range of emerging and developing economies.
She expects to downgrade the IMF global forecast next week. U.S. stocks began the fourth quarter with a rally Monday thanks to the new trade agreement between the U.S. and Canada. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Namibia's president calls for consideration of land expropriation in Namibia.
That a land issue is a very serious problem in our country. So what the president said is land is our economic base, and we must have a good discussion that will enable us to find solutions to the land question.
Netumbo Nandi Undetwa is Namibia's Minister of International Relations and Cooperation. We will talk with a civil society leader who says the president is playing with election politics with the land issue. Lawyers for former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo have asked the ICC to drop all charges against him. And NGOs in Burundi are concerned about the country's new employment laws.
This is only applicable in political positions. If you want to talk about the technical aspect, it's not applicable to talk about ethnicity. I think the government is making a mistake.
Bigirimana Jean-Claude is a university professor in Burundi. Zambia's National University Student Union criticized the deportation of a Kenyan professor, and the symposium this week will look at traditional medicine and mental health in Senegal. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Namibian President Hage Geingob says his country should consider land expropriation for redistribution to the black majority as opposed to the willing buyer, willing seller policy. Speaking Monday at the National Conference in Den Haag, President Geingob called for a constitutional amendment to make expropriation of land with just compensation possible. Netumbo Nandi Undetwa is Namibia's Minister of International Relations and Cooperation. She said land expropriation in the public interest has long been enshrined in the Namibian constitution, but that the government has not enforced it because it has relied on the willing buyer, willing seller principle.
As you might know, that a land issue is a very serious problem in our country, because you know that both the successive colonial regime, the land policy whereby the Africans were dispossessed of land. Of course, when we came into the country, we adopted the policy of willing seller, willing buyer. Unfortunately, we could not reach that because those who were having land, they were not really offering a land for selling, particularly the land that could be useful for resettlement purpose. Because of that, there is a demand, rightly so, that we must make a review. So what the president said is only to say that we have come to the conference. We are all Namibians. Land is our economic base, and we must have a good discussion that will enable us to find solutions to the land question.
Madam, what do you say to your critics who say that why now bring about this land expropriation?
We are not talking about land expropriation. We are talking about land redistribution, the land reform. And we have been addressing it from the data for independence. That is why in 1991 we had the land conference. Of course, as I say that we did not reach the target for the hectares that we wanted to have in the hands of the government so that it can be redistributed to those who were landless. That is why we have now to make a review as to what should we do now in order to find the best way of getting the land that is required so that there is a balance in terms of access to the land and also to make it more productive to contribute to the economic development of the country.
People think that your government is doing this now because of election that is coming and you want to play politics. How do you respond to that?
That is not correct. In any case, that is a program. I have to tell you that there has been even a special land committee which was looking into that. So it's only the time has come for us to do a review, because the last land conference was 27 years ago, and definitely we have not reached our target. Our elections will always be there, because even if we do not do it this year and we do it in 2020, it will be still be seen as preparing for the next elections.
Madam, help me to understand. When you talk about Zimbabwe, then South Africa, people say, well, the whites that have the land use it to be productive, to help the agricultural system. So it should stay like that. What do you say to those people who say large plots of land need to stay in the hands of whites because they can use it to produce food?
There are Namibian black farmers who, the fear of those who got farmers, and they are using it. So we just want the land to be productive, even when it's going to be distributed to the landless now. They have also to be helped in order to make it productive. If the impression is created that it's only whites who can make land productive, we don't buy into that one. So you have a successful black farmers in South Africa, in Namibia, and in other African countries. So for one to think that the land is only productive when it's hands of the white, I think that is unacceptable.
Madam, thank you very much again for taking your time to speak with us. We do appreciate very much.
Thank you very much.
Netumbo Nandi-Undetwa is Namibia's Minister of International Relations and Cooperation. She was speaking with me from the capital, Windhoek. The head of the Namibian civil society group, Forum for the Future, says he is not impressed with the land policies of President Haj Gingob. Samson Undekwela also says the president's call for a constitutional amendment to address the country's land ownership problems is politically motivated. Undekwela tells VOA's Peter Clotty that the president's call for a constitutional amendment proves that the government has been ineffective in solving the problem of land ownership in Namibia.
What we know is that the president is under pressure, especially from young people. And next year, 2019, we are going to have elections. All what he says may not come from his heart. He may try to please the voters. So what we can see is that not very serious, drastic steps will be taken about the land issue in Namibia.
Why are you saying the president is just playing politics here? Because he called for a constitutional amendment, which is a very serious constitutional or legal step for him to take regarding the land issue in Namibia.
Our constitution is very, very democratic. It has got Chapter 3, which cannot be changed. And the protection of private property is under Chapter 3 of the Namibian Constitution. So he knows about that. But as I said, most of what he says is because of the elections next year.
So let me ask you this question. Do you think that what he is saying about the constitutional amendment is just politics? Because I understand that the government came up with a policy of willing buyer, willing seller. He admits that that policy seemed not to have delivered. That is why he's calling for the constitutional amendment. What can he do in this instance then?
But he said the problem was that the farmers who were selling their farms, they increased the price so much. They were not honest with the government. So that is why the government didn't buy many farms, because the prices were very, very high. So now what he would try to do is to convince the farmers not to make their prices of their farms very, very high. The farmers in Namibia, they have a very strong Namibian Farmers Union. It's very, very strong, and they are going to be very well represented at the conference.
But let me ask you, what are these young people specifically asking the government to do about this land policy of willing seller that has not really fared well by the president's admission, and what next steps to take in order to address this problem of land redistribution in Namibia?
Yes, the young people, you know, they are divided in two groups. There are those who want land in urban areas so that they can build their houses. But then there are also young people from the communities, especially in central and southern Namibia, who were dispossessed of their ancestral land. So now what these young people are saying that when farmers are available in that part of the country, it should be given to the local people, not to the people coming from other regions of the country. But now the big number of the young people, they want urban land so that they can build their houses, especially the educated ones.
Samson Undekwela is the head of the Namibian civil society group Forum for the Future. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Windhoek. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 2nd. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Non-governmental organizations in Burundi have raised concerns about the country's new employment law that is based on ethnicity. This comes after the government last week announced the suspension of all foreign NGOs in the country for failure to comply with the new law. Moses Javier Rimana reports from Bujumbura.
Last week, the Burundi government announced the suspension of 130 foreign NGOs in the country, saying the organizations failed to comply with the new law requiring employers to recruit employees based on their ethnicity. According to the new law, 40% of the employees should be from the Tutsi ethnic group and 60% from the Hutu. Major General Silas Nigurirwa is the permanent secretary of the Burundi's National Security Council.
Le Conseil National de Sécurité décide la suspension temporaire de toutes les
activités. He says that the National Security Council decided to temporarily suspend all activities of NGOs for a period of 3 months. From 1st October, Major General Silas Nigurirwa also says the NGOs will only resume activities after they comply with the new law. The Burundi Senate last month gave the foreign NGOs 6 months to comply with the country's law on recruiting professionals. Josias Ukuriniyesu, the communications manager of Action Aid in Burundi, says that abiding by the new law will also make recruiting new staff a major challenge for his organization.
But NGOs have now a lot of questions around the quality of new staff that will be recruited based on their ethnic group. It might not be easy to find qualified people within a short period of time. This new law does not concern ethnic issues alone. It brings issues around NGOs' expenditures, where it is recommended NGOs to spend over 65% of their funds directly to beneficiaries.
The Burundi Ministry of Home Affairs listed 130 foreign non-government organizations in Burundi. 75 of the organizations are from European Union, Belgium having 15, followed by Italy with 12, and Holland with 11, and the United States with 31 organizations in Burundi. Bigirimana Jean-Claude is a university professor in Burundi.
This is only applicable in political positions. If you want to talk about the technical aspect, it's not applicable to talk about ethnicity. I think the government is making a mistake. Technical positions are taken by technicians, by experts.
Action Aid's communication manager Josias Ukuriniyesu believes the citizens will be victims for the next 3 months if the government does not lift the suspension.
There are a lot of concerns within this new law which need clarifications, but I have a hope the meeting of internal affairs will clarify the situation. In Action Aid, we remain concerned by vulnerable families that are not going to benefit from our support for the next 3 months.
Representatives of NGOs are expected to have a meeting soon with the Home Affairs Minister. Meanwhile, hundreds of Burundians are expected to lose their jobs as part of the implementation process.
That was Moses Javier Rimana reporting from Bujumbura. At the International Criminal Court in The Hague, lawyers for former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo on Monday asked the court to dismiss all charges against Mr. Gbagbo for lack of sufficient evidence. But prosecutors say they have evidence to convict the former Ivorian president. Mr. Gbagbo and his ally, Charles Blaye Goudé, are charged with 4 counts of crimes against humanity, including murder, rape, and other inhumane acts allegedly committed during Ivory Coast 2010-2011 post-election violence. Parampreet Singh is a senior counsel at the U.S.-based Human Rights Watch.
I think what's important to recognize is that this is just a routine stage of the proceeding. So basically, after the prosecution presents its case, then as a matter of routine, defense often say to the judges, look, we don't think there's a case here, and here are the reasons why. And so that's basically what this set of hearings is about.
Do you think the prosecutors have any evidence against Mr. Gbagbo? And how come they haven't presented that evidence?
Well, the prosecution would say, in fact, they do have that evidence. And it's hard outside of the case to fully assess the weight of the evidence presented. I mean, that's really the job for the judges, especially considering that a lot of evidence was presented outside of the public courtroom. So information was presented to the judges that the public doesn't have access to. So it's hard to evaluate the strength of the prosecution's case overall. But, you know, the prosecution is saying, we do have a case. We think this should move forward. It's the defense's job to refute that, and it's for the judges now to decide whether or not this should, in fact, move forward for the defense to basically refute the allegations.
There have been some major developments in Ivory Coast. Just recently this year, President Alassane Ouattara released Simone Gbagbo, the former president's wife. A number of other prisoners were also released. Political supporters of Mr. Gbagbo in Ivory Coast are pinning his release from the International Criminal Court as a demand for any political cooperation in Ivory Coast. Do you think the ICC can be swayed by this kind of argument?
No. The only thing that will sway the judges is the evidence that's presented. You know, these political developments are not relevant for the proceedings at hand. And, you know, the judges will have to justify their decision one way or the other. And it has to be based purely on the facts presented before them and the law that they have to apply.
Do you think the case itself, do you think it could be concluded before the year ends?
No, because right now we're at the stage of no case to answer. So you have hearings at least through this week, it may be longer, for the judges to hear whether or not the case should continue. They then have to issue a decision based on that. Whether or not that will happen before the end of the year, I don't know. I think it really also depends on other things that the judges have to do. And let's say they decide that it should move forward, then you start in the defense phase of the case. The prosecution's case started in January of 2016, and now we're here in October of 2018. So the defense's case will take a significant amount of time. You know, if this does go ahead, unclear how long it will take to get a verdict, but it will take time.
Parampreet, we do thank you very much for speaking with us again.
No problem, anytime.
Parampreet Singh is a senior counsel at the U.S.-based Human Rights Watch. She was speaking with me from New York City. The Zambian National Student Union has demanded an apology from government spokesperson Dora Celia for her role in the deportation of Kenyan lawyer Professor Patrick Lumumba. Professor Lumumba, a critic of Zambia-China relations, had been invited by students at Aden University at a time when Zambia is experiencing a high level of anti-Chinese sentiments. The government says Professor Lumumba is a security risk. On Monday, Professor Lumumba said he will write to the African Union to protest his deportation from Zambia. Misha Kakonde is president of the Zambia National Student Union.
As the Zambia National Student Union, yeah, we are saddened by the deportation of Professor Lumumba from Zambia, who was invited by one of our affiliate universities, that is Aden University.
So, have you protested to the government for the decision to deport Professor Lumumba?
Basically, we've called upon government to avoid a strained relationship, that is, between students of higher learning and government, by ensuring that there is interface between government and the students of higher learning. In general, to avoid the repeat of this situation in future.
Misha, do you think the Zambian government was too sensitive to what Professor Lumumba could have talked about? Because I think he's well known for his views on this Zambia-China relations.
Looking at the government wasn't that sensitive because as they had given their position, they had their own reasons as to why he wasn't allowed.
What reasons did the Zambian government give?
One of the reasons that we've come to learn of is just that the aspect of security. And that's the whole idea.
Zambian university students, would you like to have Professor Lumumba come back to lecture?
I know. I think that question would be better, you know, answered by university. That is Aden University.
How exactly do the university students feel cheated by Professor Lumumba's deportation?
As Zanasu, who spoke based on the fact that one of our affiliate universities that happens to be Aden University. So we're speaking on behalf of our affiliate university. And as Zanasu, we don't feel cheated because we are just another body for all students' unions around the country, and we had to speak for one of our affiliate universities.
Misha Kakonde is president of the Zambia National Students' Union. You're speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. This week, the Goldfad Institute in Senegal will hold a symposium that looks at how traditional medicine has approached mental health in Senegal. Organizers are presenting a book which is based on the work of German writer and ethnologist Herbert Fitch. During the 70s and 80s, he worked and studied mental health treatments in Senegal. One of the more well-known treatments at the time was art. The lessons learned from these decades can be applied today. Dr. Ibrahima Jean, an organizer of the conference, tells Ricky Stryak.
He made a lot of interviews with people working at this time at the hospital of the University Hospital of Fan. He made interviews with the former president, Leopold Sédar Senghor. And he was just as an observer about things that were happened in Senegal. And that's why he compared a lot of things on this on his book with the title Psyche, an approach of mental diseases on in Senegal. And the main topic we want to focus on.
And I think this is very interesting. He makes a comparison between what quote-unquote modern medicine may be at the time versus Senegalese traditional treatment of mental health issues. Is that correct?
Yes.
What kind of interesting findings do you think come out of that kind of a comparison?
He wants at this time to highlight how Senegalese people deal with mental diseases. When I say how to manage mental diseases, it's not just like clinical management or medical management, but cultural management, social management, and medical management. And the third panel is dealing with art as a therapy of mental illnesses in Senegal.
At the time that he was in Senegal, this was a big approach, especially in the Fan Hospital, was it not? Using art to deal with mental illness.
Yes, he was really surprised meeting people who were considered at this time as, let us say, people who were ill, mental, we were really faced mental illness. And he was surprised at this time to see that those people are really artists, are able to make really big things. And he tried to have another look, different to what Senegalese people are considering at this time. And he met at this time one of the precursors of painting arts in Senegal. And at this time, he does a lot of things to make this man, to give him access to another public, to make him possible to meet really another artist and to travel around the world and to explain what was the essence of his artistic issues. I think that that is one of the points we have to explain and to highlight the Senegalese public now to make visible what was the work of those artists and what is the contribution of Herbert Fichte about this issue.
That was Dr. Ibrahim Jian, a professor of German languages and civilizations at the University of Dakar. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from the Senegalese capital. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Namibian President Hage Geingob says his country should consider land expropriation for redistribution to the black majority as opposed to the willing buyer, willing seller policy. Speaking Monday at the National Conference in Windhoek, President Geingob called for a constitutional amendment to make expropriation of land with just compensation possible. Natumbe Nandi Mdetwa, Namibia's Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, says land expropriation in the public interest has long been enshrined in the Namibian constitution. That is it for this Tuesday, October 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you, Africa, a very good day.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London!
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA, or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.